Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
It's time for the Dr. Tanji Show.
Hey, you're on the air with Dr. Tanji. Talk to me.
As soon as I hear your voice, Dr. Tanji, my day is better.
Hey, Dr. Tanji. I took your advice and made some changes in my life. And you know what? I've been winning ever since. Thank you for your advice.
Now, here's Dr. Tanji.
Hey, and welcome to the show that was created on Kingdom Principles, a show designed to take you from where you are to where you need to go, where you want to go. Today's show is different. It is a special edition, a show that we need to shed light on some things that are taking place, and we've got a round table of sorts today. Of course, we've got our girl Jeannie, Kitty of the City, here, and if you don't hear her meowing, she is meowing. I want to say that yesterday we realized what we kind of thought would happen, hoping it wouldn't, but 5 years in the waiting, and we get a verdict from a situation on Mr. Eric Gardner, that untimely death that we are still talking about even today. And our guests are guests who have written books and who have blogs and who have experienced it. And we need to have that conversation because it's real. Mothers, if you've got little brown boys, little black boys like I do, and if you're anything like me, even though they are adults, I still concern myself. I do not like to use the word worry, but there are concerns every time they get in their vehicle. And first up, I want to introduce a gentleman that knows what to do in situations that can cause havoc, can wreak havoc. He's written a book, a beautiful book, The First 7 Seconds. So he's bringing that to the forefront to tell us, listen, this is what you need to do. This is what we're going to put in motion. And I'm grateful for that, Mr. Greg Will. Greg
Winston.
Winston, I'm thinking Wilson. Forgive me, please.
Thank you for joining
us.
Happy to be here.
Oh, my gosh. How did you get here? Why is it important for you to tackle this firsthand? I said to you that this is big.
Yes. Our hearts are in the same place, Doctor.
Heather,
the teen just home. She just started driving. And the first thing I tried to do was take out all clothing that would lead to death, like hoodies. And I thought, I'm just putting a Band-Aid on it. Mm-hmm. And it started me on a mission of interviewing police officers. I interviewed over 100. To find out how they thought. My idea is simple. Let's think like they do so we know what to do when we're pulled over.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
That's what started.
Wow. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Because when you think about your own and mm-hmm. now you're thinking about someone else, you truly are loving your neighbor as you love yourself. Absolutely. In your book, page 19, you said there are 7 things cops look for when someone is pulled over. Can you just expound upon maybe?
Sure. I want to deal with the top 7 because there are many things they look for.
Okay.
But one of the first things they look for is an accident. If there's a crash on your car, they think you stole the car and you ran into something. So their first thought is, let me investigate that damage. That's one of the first things they look for. Okay. Second thing they look for is the license plate. They want to see if there's anything masking a number. If you have that clear plastic cover on it, they will stop you for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they look at the, even if the license plate is askew, they think that you put it on there and they should stop you.
Okay.
That's the second thing.
Okay.
The third thing has to do with windows.
Okay.
They'll stop you if the window is cracked on the driver's side. They think you broke the window and stole the car.
Oh, wow. Let me bring our Miss Cicely Lewis in.
Yeah.
She has a blog, Holly Montres, is that right?
Holly Montres,
yes. Absolutely. And you're involved in several mom groups. listening to Greg say, okay, these are some of the things that you can expect. I mean, it's just a written rule, an unwritten rule. What's your take on that? How does that make you want to do even the more than what you're doing?
Well, I didn't know those things myself. And I feel like every Black mom in the United States should know exactly what police are looking for, because you never want to go from a place of worry or fear or concern.
Absolutely.
You want to be informed. Mm-hmm. So if I can sit down with my son, who's only 9 at this point, but as I prepare him to say, these are the things that you need to know, son, then he feels equipped and I feel more equipped.
Yeah.
Because inevitably he will get stopped.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's just going to happen. That's
and he'll feel more comfortable knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he won't be as nervous.
So this is information that I plan on sharing with all of my mommy friends.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for saying that, because it's so very important. And I want to kind of segue into our other guest, Lewis from Compton.
Hello.
Who brings a different kind of experience here. You're going to come from the place of this happened to you.
Yeah.
Would you expound upon that, please?
Well, I have several incidents that happened to me. I had one incident where I was in, like, Hollywood area, like I was explaining to the lady earlier.
Okay.
I was with my friend Karan. We was coming from, like, just buying clothes, just enjoying our day. So the police stop us and basically, like, racial profile us and saying that it'd be fit the description of, I guess, a lady, a Caucasian lady was just robbed.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, so that is like handcuffed and detained on the sidewalk for a little minute. Then they brought me in the middle of the street because they said I'm the main one that fit the description. But so basically it could have went like a whole nother way where the lady could have said, you're the person.
Oh, absolutely.
Lied,
but, absolutely.
But now, they let us go.
I want to ask you, because this is really, really important, and we see it all of the time, we do. And sometimes we kind of just turn a blind eye at that moment. How does that make you feel?
Nervous, frightened, not knowing that at any given moment your freedom is going to be taken away from you for no simple reason, something that you did not clearly do.
Absolutely. Do you mind me asking how long after maybe a big incident that happened in the news, how long after that incident of racial profiling or someone losing their lives untimely, did that happen to you?
Well, I have a friend that lost his life when I was 15. He was 16.
Oh.
He was named, we called him Lil Avery. He was gunned down by the Compton sheriffs.
Oh, come
on. They said they lied and said his cell phone, which was the sidekick at the time, saying that it was a gun, but it wasn't.
Oh, dear. Wow. That's, to see something like that, I've read it, but I've never been able to touch someone who has gone through that. And for that, I am truly sorry. Greg, you hear this. What do we do? You were saying, okay, these are some of the steps that they're going to look for. Mm-hmm. What can we do? He's riding in the car, minding his own business, gets pulled over because he looked like he fits the bill.
Yeah.
What do we do?
The first thing I want people to pay attention to is something I call shot. When you're pulled over, I want you to stop immediately. They are trained to stop you in a certain area. Don't go past. As soon as you hear the light or hear the sound, see the light, pull over immediately.
Okay.
That's the first thing. Second thing is I want you to go to habits. I'll talk about those habits as we talk.
Okay.
The second thing after that is I want you to observe. I've found that there are specific types. In the South, it's older cops that are more aggressive.
Okay.
In the West, where we are, there are younger cops that are more aggressive. Observe who stops you.
Okay.
Then the next thing I want you to do is only answer those questions that are asked. Don't volunteer any information. So talk when you're talked to. Don't volunteer anything.
Okay.
That's the first thing. Other than that, I want your hands and at 10 and 2. Roll all the windows down.
Okay.
Not just the front ones, all of them. I want you to turn off the music. And make sure that if you have to reach for your papers, you announce that that's what you're doing.
Mm.
They say, I want your license and register. Okay, officer, I'll be glad to get them. They're in the glove compartment. May I reach over and get them?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Those are the first things I want you to do.
Wow, good stuff. Yeah. Really, really good stuff. Hearing that again, Mom, I'm coming back to you.
Yeah.
You've got this 9-year-old and you're saying, okay, I'm going to have to teach you this.
Yeah.
Did you ever think that you would have to teach your son?
Well, I did a documentary. It's a short little documentary about raising boys, you know, and I wanted to talk to moms about their experience raising boys. And it was just interesting listening to them talk about how some of their children were kind of criminalized, even at 4, 5, and 6, the way they were being, I guess, disciplined by their, by the education system, their Caucasian teachers. So the conversations need to start really young.
Absolutely.
So just knowing that I'm not there yet, but knowing that I need to have conversations like that with my son about the way in which he communicates with authority outside of his mother and father.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a long conversation that needs to be had over their lifetime, over the time they're growing. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Lawrence, now that you've been a victim of that, what's your attitude now when you're kind of out with your friends or you're wanting to hang out and you've got to reassure mom that, hey, I'm going to be fine? What's your attitude now? Are you afraid? What do you do?
I try to keep calm, you know, even though I'm really nervous if I do happen to get pulled over. So I just try to cooperate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Now, Greg, we know about the statistics, okay? Would you just kind of give us a little bit of insight as to why is it so, it's so high? We represent, what, 12, maybe 21% of the population, but 38% of what's going wrong with when we're stopped or when we're...
Yeah. The first thing I want to say is that we've been fooled by those numbers. We look at 12%, we look at 26% of us being abused. Those numbers are underreported. Mm-hmm. And what there's a new council that came out, and they were talking about it. It's called Fatal Encounters. And they measure the number of incidents against press and police reports. It's almost 30% higher.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. And here's the striking number that caught me. It's not just black people. I thought it was. It's black and Hispanic that make up 62% of those people that are killed by police every year.
Wow.
It's by far the highest margin.
Talk about putting another wrinkle in the brain, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's amazing to me.
That's alarming.
Yeah.
So when we talk about this doctrine of qualified immunity.
Yeah.
When I read that, I'm thinking, I got angry. I'm not even going to lie to you.
Right.
There's no way. Would you tell us in layman's terms how that affects this?
Okay. Earlier when you were talking about Mr. Garner, Eric
yes.
Garner.
Yes.
I felt really bad because
yes.
I knew that decision was coming down before that time.
Okay.
And qualified immunity.
Okay.
It's a clause that was written in the early 1900s, and it was written to protect political officials. It's been extended to police officers, and what it does is that it gives them a way to commit a crime and not be held responsible. And there was a recent ruling in New York on just such a death, and I knew when the Eric Garner came up, 5 years was too long.
Right.
Everyone knows that.
Right.
And I knew that the officer would get off. My problem with qualified immunity is that it's a provision that's essentially made for officials and politicians. It's been extended to police officers, but it gives them sort of a get out of jail card free.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I was researching today, and here's what the phrase they use: reasonable but mistaken judgments. That could go for anything.
Oh, come on.
That's the phrase they use.
So cell phone in the hand, or you were reaching for something.
So it's reasonable. I thought that was reasonable. I thought he had an
AK-47. Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Cicely.
Yeah.
Come on. What do we do here?
Well, initially you want to start from fear. I mean, I just initially think I'm afraid. I'm fearful. Yeah. What do I do with all of this fear?
Right.
So I think it's time that mothers, fathers, that we start talking about these issues and preparing our sons so that they're not afraid. Because if they are afraid, if I got stopped by the police and I would have my cell phone in my hand.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I was probably on Instagram.
Right.
And next thing I know, there's bullets flying. Like, you, that's a place of fear. So absolutely. I just hope, thank you for doing this so that people can listen and have conversations that aren't around fear, but are around knowledge.
Yes.
And around talking to each other.
Yes.
And knowing what the laws are, because I didn't know. I didn't know what that was either.
Right.
So
is there a formula that you use when you're discussing with mom groups?
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, this is what I am doing. Is there a formula that you're taking to the marketplace?
Well, with me, I felt like I was the only mom at the time who was having problems with my son. And I felt alone and isolated because I didn't understand why these Caucasian teachers and administrators were having such a problem with my son.
Mm.
But then when I reached out, got beyond my fear and started talking to other moms and saying, this is what happened. They were like, oh, I can one up you. Let me tin up you. This is what happened to my son. And some of the stories were horrifying. All of them are in the little video that I did. But I am so glad that I was able to talk to them, because now when you talk about these things to your sons, to your moms, to your daughters, there's a sense of empowerment in that.
Yes.
Because you're like, okay, I'm not alone. You will get stopped. A teacher may look at you in a certain way. When you walk in through the doors of kindergarten, that teacher may have preconceived notions about what a black boy is supposed to say, do, act like. So once you have all that knowledge, then you're able to say, okay, how can we move from there and
Absolutely.
Not just be paralyzed by your fear that all these white people hate my little black boy?
Right.
Like, you know,
right.
I, as a mom, I'm emotional. I want to cry. But it's like, okay,
Absolutely.
After you cry, mm-hmm. then what?
Then what?
So I'm glad that we're having this conversation today, because this is the then what.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I appreciate your honesty. I really, really do. And I appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah.
Thank you. Wow. Lawrence. And we're here.
Yeah.
Now what? I ask you, how do you feel when you're getting ready to go out and for the evening? Now, how do you process? You're stopped. You know what happened once upon a time. This gentleman is giving you this insight now. How do you marry what you're doing? How do you merge all of this information to make an informed decision on when you get stopped? How do you do that?
Try to basically prevent certain things from happening.
Okay. So like, is that...
Don't make any sudden movements, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Is that limiting where you go because you don't want to be in that space where you know, okay, a policeman is going to be there and I just don't want to be there? Is that restrictive for you at all?
No, I don't like really walk in fear, but I mean, I still get nervous, but I'm still going to have to live my life.
Absolutely, you are. Absolutely.
So I'm not going to let that stop me.
Right.
So.
Good deal. Thank you so much. Greg.
Yes.
You're expressing a couple of things. You said SHOT, and I know those are acronyms for.
Yeah. SHOT is the one we were talking about earlier about stopping quickly, going to habit, observing, and talking when you're asked to speak.
Right.
The thing that I'll tell you, I mentioned my daughter earlier.
Yes.
She was recently stopped, and she was stopped because I bought her a car and it had CarMax on the front.
Okay.
So they had their plate.
Okay.
She pulled over immediately. She knew everything that I talked about. And in the book where I talk on page 85 about how to get a warning, she got a warning rather than a ticket. But as Lewis talked about, she wasn't nervous.
Okay.
She knew exactly what to do. She walked away with not a fix-it ticket, but a warning.
Gotcha.
And I feel so confident now with her driving because I've gone through these principles with her.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is just, to even have to have this conversation, it almost brings tears, you know? But we got to be real here. This does happen, and it happens on a daily basis.
Well, it's life or death. I mean, these conversations are literally life or death. Every man that I know in my life has gotten stopped by a police, so it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's necessary conversations because it's your life is on the line, or could be.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm so glad that Cecily, Dr. Tanji, and Greg Winston, and Lewis are talking about this, Lawrence, because like you, Greg, you have an upcoming series called the Greg Winston Talk Series, where with all of the organizations that Cecily has, we need to have these forms, and it needs to be consistent. So, like I said, so much is in your book so that this information can be digested, because it's a lot. And some of the things that you mentioned, we didn't even know today. So imagine, like I said, you know, we have to start these conversations as early as our young children, so when they're Lawrence's age, that they already know these things. So what are some of the other things that you will talk about in your series that moms can, you know, begin the book today?
Okay. It's really two parts. It's one deals with what to do with police interaction. The other part has to do with how we get the most out of our potential. Like most people around, like if I did a show of hands, most of you would say, I have more potential than I currently use. Mm-hmm. The problem is we don't know how to get to it. So I have about 10 steps that I cover that teach kids everything from visioning to thought process to self-talk. I really teach them how to get the most out of themselves so they can string together more good days than bad days.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you found that, and I'm so glad you segued into that, because have you found it when you're teaching the children, you know, these principles, and these are key principles, but the reinforcement, if mom or dad are not reinforcing, how do we bridge that gap?
I use what psychologists call pairing. I invite the parent and the child. And I use the trick to keep them going. I use music and video, and I may go from hip-hop to old R&B, and I'll bridge that gap so that people stay interested. So I'll give a fact. There may be some music tied to it. I'll show a video. It's moving all the time. So it's entertaining as they learn. And I'm asking the parent then to take that information and to continue to teach.
Absolutely.
That's what I think causes it.
Oh, absolutely. So destroying...
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. Destroying myths and breaking down barriers, basically. Wow. With moms and what Greg is saying, that's got to be something that you see on a constant.
No, that's brilliant. And one thing that a mother taught me that I passed on to my son, and I think it applies to even with being stopped by anyone or a police officer or someone that's in authority, I always tell him to never lose your power. Mm-hmm. So I empower him at 9 years old that he's a powerful young man. He's full of testosterone. And I'm like, you have power. Yes. So if you are angry, which you will be, that's an emotion, that's normal. Mm-hmm. You need to maintain your power. And when you give it away, you give it away by lashing out, by being disrespectful, by making a sudden move, by talking nasty to another individual. Those are ways that you're passing out your power, and then you don't have any power of how they're going to respond to that.
Right.
So when he comes home from school, I ask him, did you lose your power today, or did you keep your power? He said, you know what? I kept my power today, Mom, because somebody hit me, and I wanted to hit them back, but I was like, I'm not going to lose my power to not have recess or lose my power to not go in the playground. So I told the teacher, and I kept my power for tomorrow to keep, you know, keep his recess time or whatever.
Absolutely.
So for me, that mom who gave me that pearl, I don't want, like I always say, I don't want my son to live in fear, but I want to empower him so that he's not walking in fear. Like you were saying, you know, you might make you nervous, but you're not afraid.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we want to be clear, we love officers, all that they do in the community, cop bashing. We have so many good cops, and as well as the bad ones. And also, Greg, a little later you'll talk about, again, it depends, I'm sure, heavily, what climate you're in, what city, you know, that's going to determine a lot of the mindset. And I'm very grateful, Dr. Tanji. Mm-hmm. We have, with over 20 years on police force and another market that goes through so much turbulence in the Miami-Dade area, Valerie Hall, who has retired and still teaching the subjects we're talking about as a professor at Florida International University, criminal justice. So she's seen both sides, and she really gets it.
Ah, wonderful. Hello. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so very much for taking time out of your busy, busy schedule to be a part of this roundtable discussion. Wow, you've seen it firsthand.
Yes. Yes, I have. Yes, mm-hmm. I have. For a very long time. In various fashions, too.
Absolutely. What have you seen as far as the landscape of change from where we first began to see things of this magnitude to where we are now?
Well, here in Miami-Dade, we, when I started in the late 1980s, we experienced a variations of change here. We started in the 80s where we had a couple of civil unrest because of some serious incidents that resulted in citizens losing their lives behind police brutality. And that resulted in the police departments here being forced to hire minority personnel, minority staff. Mm-hmm. So then from there, we police force also started to change and move into community policing, where you saw police working more in the community, actually moving their districts or their police stations into the community, doing more community-based serving, to the point wherein you knew the officer that served your area by name. You had their phone numbers. Some officers actually lived in a community because there was different campaigns, initiatives for officers. And then we've seen, again, a shift in the actual way police were being hired. So they went from hiring college officers that completed at least 60 credits and some sort of college, to military individuals, people who were coming home from serving in different capacities in different wars. So that changed a little bit of the personality of the style of officer you will now engage. And to recently, when I retired in 2011, they have now shifted back a little bit to hiring an officer with some college education too, but still really moving their segment of training to paramilitary.
Mm. I see. So that the mindset just from that is going to be totally different, I'm sure.
Of course. Of course. Of course. It does. It changes your mindset. There's a different way you are taught to respond in certain circumstances. Mm-hmm. As a community police, you knew everybody in the community. You engaged them in a different way. You called them more by names. They called you by names. They were more friendly approach to now we've seen a shift where you won't know your officer. And they have heavy armor on. They're carrying big vests. They may be wearing all black. They're carrying high profile weapons. So things are changing. Wow. And some officers may say it's changing because as a police officer, you encounter a different type of individual now.
I see.
You know, there's a lot of high powered weaponry out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you wouldn't want an officer to respond with just a six shooter. You would want an officer to respond with the same type of caliber of weapon. But that doesn't, unfortunately, give a great enough excuse for the way they approach and their style that they have now chosen as a way of carrying on as a police officer.
Hearing this, Greg, what's the first thing that you're thinking? How did we get here?
Well, her description really talks about the systemic nature of police departments. We tend to think it's an officer. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's an officer. I think it's institutionalized racism. When she spoke about hiring and that practice change, mm-hmm. there was a change that followed that.
Right.
So when we look at what's going on, we tend to remember one or two cases. We can say Trayvon. We can say Michael. We can say Eric.
Right.
It's a system. You can't get to 1,000 deaths a year without having a system that causes that.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Wow.
I wanted to ask her, what was the biggest change she noticed? What was the thing that had the most impact?
Oh, wow. I would say the change that I experienced is when because I'm a community police officer, mm-hmm. worked in community policing for a numerous amount of years. When that arena of policing, that style of policing was diminished, you know, we weren't receiving as much funding as we needed to sustain it. So slowly it went from having maybe 200 or 300 officers in that particular area to down to 20, to down to five, okay. to almost obsolete.
Yeah.
So that was when I noticed the change of policing, because now you're not just responding to a call, you're responding to an incident. So now your mindset is shift. You yeah. shift because you don't know where you're going. You don't know who you're going to engage. You don't know what the particular area is. A lot of times as an officer, when you're responding, you respond as a community police officer to an area you're familiar with. You can almost call the captain of the neighborhood and say, hey, what's going on?
Right.
And get familiar with what's going on before you occur. But when that community policing went away, it changes police. It changed police for us here in Miami-Dade. Mm.
So what can we do as citizens, as community members? What do we do? Because we know it's there, and it's going to get, unfortunately, progressively worse.
Yeah, I agree. I would do, and when I was able to chime in, I heard you discuss conversations that you are having or someone is having with their son.
Yeah.
I would say that is where it starts. And not only with our sons, but with our daughters. Our daughters, they are increasing. I have a lot of my students that are from various colleges. They're now in law enforcement. And they tell me how they are seeing more women in the back of police cars now. And we look at Sandra Bland. We look at many others who have had that unfortunate experience. So when we say, now we're just talking to our male children, but to our female children, and doing exactly what you say, knowing how to stand your ground, mm-hmm. knowing how to ask the right questions, and in the same time, being able to control yourself. Yes. Where we see in a lot of these instances is where people have lost control. Because mm-hmm. that's what an officer wants. An officer wants you to lose your control. Okay. They want you to act out. They want you to give them just enough so that they can take it to the next level.
Gotcha.
So having that conversation, teaching your children to get the badge number, to get the car number, to ask, why am I being stopped? To be familiar with the areas in which they're going. I had a conversation with a parent today about what school should I send my child to. Send your child to a school where the police force is somewhat fair. You know, knowing where they go. Because sometimes you could drive into an area where, unfortunately, the police force may not be as fair and equitable as they should. But you don't know that. And next thing you know, you're being stopped. And next thing you know, you're outside the car. I do a thing here in South Florida. We talk about know your rights. Mm-hmm. What is your rights when you get stopped? Making sure that you have your driver's license, your proof of insurance, or whatever your state requirement is. Making sure you have that readily available. Make sure that while you're being stopped, you remember the name badge, the badge number, where you are. Where are you? Where are you being stopped at? Because when it's time for you to go file an internal affairs complaint, that's the information you're going to need to know.
That's really good stuff. Wow, what a blessing you are to not only give us information, but to actually to be able to apply this knowledge. I am so grateful for what you've done, what you're doing. Thank you. Thank you for sharing with us. And I know that the listeners are going to be beneficial. It's going to benefit them.
Thank you so very much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Wow. So we hear that. And we've got work to do.
We have a lot of work to do, but I want to echo something she said. She talked about a young lady that was killed in Texas. Her name is Sandra Bland.
Yes.
I responded on Instagram because a woman wrote in saying, well, she was being militant with the police. She was talking rough to the police, and I had to respond.
Mm-hmm.
I said, none of those actions require death. How can Dylan Roof walk into a church, kill 9 people, and be arrested with an assault rifle without incident, without a mark on him?
Yeah.
But Sandra Bland is killed because she said something an officer didn't like.
Hmm.
Well, so I want to go back to the original subject.
Absolutely.
We have to teach our kids well.
We do.
And I believe it starts with those conversations and demonstration.
Yes.
And we keep going over till they aren't nervous when they're pulled over so that their energy doesn't go up. They can de-escalate a situation. That's the answer.
That's the answer.
We're definitely going to continue these conversations and have that talk in cities around the country. And Cecily, when doing your film, what was one of the common denominators of concern you hear, you know, with your moms?
Well, exactly what you talked about. There's institutionalized racism.
Yes.
You said, how do you answer it? There's racism.
Mm-hmm.
We have a generation of young boys that are growing up. Particularly, these are the moms that I interviewed. They're in L.A. It's an all world. We've got different races. Everyone's doing their own thing. These kids are growing up seeing, having stars that are white, black, Hispanic, Asian. They see the world in such a beautiful way. But the reality of it is it's racism. It's institutionalized racism from kindergarten, on the police force, in the government. Some may argue from our president. So there's like this huge elephant in the room, and some parents are like, well, when do I talk to my son about this institutionalized racism? When do I show my son Roots? When do I tell him that there may be cops with guns? Like, when do you have those conversations, and what's appropriate? What's age appropriate? How do you deal with that? So the moms that I'm talking to, we have so many conversations that we need to have with our young boys and daughters, and we're just grappling with how to have the best conversation with the age that they're at. Yes, so that's what we're doing. They were talking about, particularly just in, with my mommies, there's so much institutionalized racism in schools.
Yeah.
That whether they be private or public, and how their children are dealing with authority figures, because the authority figures in the school systems are already looking at them, some may say, as little criminals already, and putting actions on them comparable to, not like Sandra Bland, but in ways that are, don't fit the crime, so to speak.
I know.
They may do something that doesn't necessarily equal the punishment they're giving. So the moms are kind of grappling with how to deal with that.
And another mom who knows so much about that is Cookie, who is calling from Washington, D.C., not only a super mom, but a huge community activist in our nation's capital.
Hi, Cookie. Thank you so, so very much for joining the conversation. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. How's everybody doing? And
we're
thank
great.
You for that
Good.
Wonderful introduction, Jeannie.
We're doing wonderful. You bring an element of expertise to the table. Would you expound upon it, please?
I do. I think I do. As a mom of a young African-American male, he's now 29, but I had a son who grew up who wanted to hang out with his friends, who, you know, wanted to wear the gear, wanted to do what all, you know, young men want to do, hang out, have fun. He wore the dreads. He wore the cornrows at one time. But my son was educated in high school on the honor roll, on the National Honor Society, went off to college, graduated from college, has a degree, you know, but sometimes he could be looked upon as if he get ready to do something wrong. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But my son works for the government. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So just because I hate when I see our young men just looked upon in a certain way because they're dressed or because how they appear to be dressed to you. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
It's not fair to them, and that's why I go out of my way and make sure I speak to our young men. I went into a 7-Eleven today. The young man opened the door. I made sure to tell him thank you, because we see oftentimes that doesn't happen for them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so we have to think about it. How are our young men feeling And that's what they don't get all the time. Mm-hmm. How are they feeling? Yeah. Because they know that everybody's looking at them. And so I've always taught my son to be prepared, because that's first. As a parent, you got to teach your children, be prepared. Yes. But then also, if you know your rights, then you know what you should be allowed to do, what you should be allowed to say.
Absolutely.
That's the first step, I feel.
Lawrence, when, as Cookie's saying, giving an illustration of the looks or the stares or the preconceived ideas that people mm-hmm. have in the community for an African-American or a brown Latino, what are some of the things that instinctively run through your mind when you're out in public and you're the only one that maybe look like you?
Right. I think sometimes when they see our young men, if they do have the braids or the dreads, they're automatically thinking that sets off an alarm for some folks. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
If they see them with just a T-shirt and the baggy jeans or the low-waisted jeans, that sets off another alarm. But that young man could be the same man that's just leaving from the library studying up for his doctorate. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, Cookie.
That's how he wants to wear his hair, and he should be free to wear his hair the way he wants to wear his hair. You know, my son dresses the way he wants because he likes Kanye's gear and Jay-Z's gear.
Right.
But he studied to get his degree. You know what I mean? He goes to work every day.
So
it's no judgment. I think we should get to the point where we say no judgment here.
No judgment,
you know what
here.
I mean?
Absolutely. And you, Lawrence, what are those things that you're feeling?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
No. I was talking with the gentleman that's in here who in the studio who has felt those stares, and I'm just deriving a feeling of maybe some of the experiences that he has had.
Basically, they basically look at you like you have to no good. I got that today when I was out here, just visiting with my mom.
Oh wow!
Wow!
I am so sorry. Okay.
You can just feel the energy, like when you just pull up, so you can just feel the vibe. They just give you these looks in their eyes.
Yeah.
It's sad, but you can just be minding your own business or just going somewhere to do mm-hmm. something positive, constructive. But then they make assume more assumptions in their mind that, okay, he's doing something. Okay.
You know, I want to help Lawrence with something because what he talked about was an idea that we carry.
Okay.
And I want to change that dynamic. In the book on page 35, I ask, what is it that we have in common with police officers? And I know it's an odd question, so let me give you what I found. They have families, too. They want to go home at the end of the day. They have people that they love. And guess what? They're not like what we see on television. In most cases, when I've talked to officers, 99% of them were nice. So here's what I want to say. In the first 7 seconds that they pull you over is a time where you can change the dynamic. Do the things I told you about with stopping that car, getting those windows down, putting your hands in place, have an up tick to your voice. Be smart and respectable. I'm telling you, they're just like us.
Yeah.
I know there's some bad ones, but there's some bad ones of us too.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do that, I'm telling you, you err on the side of going home safely. And that's my goal. My goal is just to save your child.
Mm.
That's all. I'm trying to save mine, and I'm trying to save others.
Wow. Thank you for
and
that.
I wanted to mention what Lawrence said, where he can kind of feel how people may look at him in a certain way.
Yes.
I have to admit, before I had a son, when I saw other black men that maybe dressed in a certain way, I too felt that way. And I would maybe lock my doors or just have a preconceived notion. And I should know better.
Right.
But when I had my son, every time I see a young man who may not necessarily be dressed in a three-piece mm-hmm. suit, I check myself and I say, that's someone's son,
yes.
that's someone's uncle, dad, mm-hmm. brother, whomever. And I have to always remind myself of their humanity because I want them to do that to my son.
Absolutely.
So I apologize on behalf of all those people that look at you like that, because to feel that kind of energy on a daily basis, it's not something that you should ingest.
No.
Well, here's the secret. Even with you, that it only takes one thing to change that dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Someone holding a door open for you, like the lady was saying, someone smiling or nodding or asking to help you with something, and all of a sudden, no matter how they're dressed, it changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want for our young men and women.
Absolutely.
I want them to change the dynamic from what they thought to what's real.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There was an incident a couple of, maybe a year ago, my husband has this thing about me being a lazy driver. I'm driving, and there was a sign that said, do not turn left. I said, well, nobody's watching, and he's not in the car, so I'll turn left. Sure enough, an officer comes on a motorcycle, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, how am I going to explain this this man that I've got a ticket? So I let the window down. He comes over, and immediately I said, I did wrong. My husband told me not to turn left. I turned left. I am so sorry. I'll take the ticket now. And he just starts to laugh. And he says, you don't have to worry about that. Let me have your license and registration. And I'm thinking, yeah, right. You're about to give me a ticket. And he said, no worries. I kid you not.
Yeah.
Do what your husband told you to do. Mm-hmm. Don't turn left here. And I started crying. And he asked me, why am I crying? And I said, because I was so afraid in that moment.
Yeah.
It didn't matter that I had a medical degree. It didn't matter that I was running businesses. In that moment, you could have made the decision and I wouldn't be here.
You know why I love that story?
Yes.
There are two H's. I tell people this all the time. There are two H's. People ask me how to get out of tickets. There are two H's.
Okay.
The first one is one you use. It's honesty. If you said, I'm just out of my head today, I missed it, I apologize. It's so rare that they hear that.
That's
you get
what
the nod.
Said.
Yeah, it's rare that they hear. The other one is humor. There was a young lady who was stopped. I got this story from a police officer, and she handed him her driver's license and had a paperclip on it. That's a note that says, I'm going to bribe you. So the police officer said, young lady, if you give me a bribe, I will write you a ticket and arrest you right now.
Yeah.
And so she continued. He said, oh, you're going to give it to me. She said, yeah. He took the driver's license and took the clip off, and it was a get-out-of-jail card free from Monopoly.
Oh, that's funny.
And he started laughing.
Yeah.
And let her go.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
That's so funny. It's humor. The two H's.
Oh, my gosh. I absolutely love that.
Wow. And Kim is on the line from the Big Apple, New York. She said this is so perfect because she is beginning to have these conversations with her young son, and she wanted to know, she's heard some of the things, Greg, that you mentioned and some of your concerns, Cecily, but she wanted to know what are some other things she can, you know, she's, I guess, obviously creating a list to prepare her for her talk with the son and what you can offer to help.
Okay.
Hi, Kim. Thank Hi, you so Kim. Much for calling.
Yeah. Kim.
How are you guys?
Great. Everyone's, day. I'm great.
Yeah. Hi. Good. Hi. Hey, Kim, sorry. Good. Everyone's great.
Kim, I wanted to tell you that I recently saw a movie that depicted the perfect way to start the conversation. The movie is called The Hate U Give.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And the actress in it is Amanda Stenberg, and the guy who's her boyfriend is Algie Smith. And it's a sad part of the movie where Algie Smith is shot. But at that moment, she knew exactly what to do. So flashback with me now. Mm-hmm. Her dad would line them up in the yard and have them go military style and ask questions. What do you do when they say this? What do you do when they do that? And she knew. At the moment she was stopped, she was on the passenger side, she put both hands on the dashboard. Right. And she told him, her boyfriend, what to do, and he didn't do it. I'm saying a lot of these things that we're afraid of can be counteracted mm-hmm. with these actions. With these words.
Absolutely. Kim, are you there?
I am.
Yeah, Kim,
Go ahead.
Sorry about that.
I am a single mom of a teenage son. And with all the stuff going on in our society today, it really does scare me because in a few years, he's going to be leaving the nest.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of at the point, like, when you go to college, I want to follow you. You know, I know I can't do that.
Right.
You know, but it just scares me because I'm so protective of him. That's my only child. And I just want to know, like, what are some things that I can do to, you know, potentially prevent, you know, this, you know, anything from happening if he's ever faced, you know, or confronted by the police.
Okay. Kim, I'd love to, first of all, don't go to college and don't stay in the dorm room. Let me start there. The thing I have to tell you has to do with repeating it to your child. Someone earlier was saying, when do we have these conversations? The answer is simple. We have them all the time.
Yeah.
You use examples. You talk to them at dinner. You talk to them in the car. And you make sure that they act the way they would act in front of a police officer when they're with you. when they're pulled over, make sure that they have their hands at 10 and 2. That's the first thing police officers, 100% of the officers I spoke to said, and when I asked, what is the first thing you look for? They said the hands. If the hands are high, I feel good. If they're low, I know something's wrong. Wow. That's the first thing they look for. The other tip is make sure the car's right. The license accurate, his license, the insurance is there. Everything is tied down. Then I want you to have this conversation with your son. So he's on the right side of right. You make him understand what the laws are. Abide by those laws. If there are people that are riding with him, they have to follow the same rules. They can't carry drugs with them. They can't have guns with them. They need to be unpopular if it means saving his life. So those are some of the first things I'd say.
I appreciate that so very much. Thank you so much, Kim, for calling us. Thank you.
Thank you.
So you've got a few seconds here. What do you tell our listeners? How do they stay safe?
Well, the first thing I want to tell people, and this is not self-serving, I want them to get this book. I've not had one person that got this book that didn't say, I learned something.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Absolutely. Cecily said it a moment ago. She said, I didn't know that.
Absolutely.
So I want to tell you, it's the first 7 seconds by Greg Winston. You got to get that.
Good deal.
Go ahead.
Okay. Cecily?
I would say have the conversations young. Start young and have it so that they can digest it at whatever age they're at. Okay. Also, I would say find other mommy friends that you can connect with,
okay,
so that you all can bounce ideas off of each other and spread knowledge and not work from a place of fear.
All right. And Lawrence?
I would like to say also, if you do come in contact with the law enforcement, just probably be respectful and just cooperate.
Absolutely. Guys, you heard it first. What a wonderful way to end a segment. Thank you so much for being here. All right. Join us again next Wednesday, 2 p.m., where we talk and we make it happen. Guys, Mondays, 5 p.m., you got to talk to Tanji on Facebook. Join me. We're going to do life together and we're going to be interactive. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Dr. Tunji Show with Dr. Tunji Scott.